This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Stream will be up and running on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, X. You can be sure to check that out. Make sure you subscribe when you go to YouTube. Makes it really easy. You don't have to search for 96.5 The Fan or Cody and Gold. Any of the shows, you won't miss them if you're subscribed on YouTube. Hope you guys are having a good Wednesday. Going to be a weird day in Kansas City. 80 yesterday, 78 yesterday. It's going to be like 35 when we walk out of the building. Not really. It'll be 40, I think. And then tomorrow morning, 30. But it's going to be weird, man. You got the new Royals hoodie on. You're ready to go for opening day next week.
Yeah. You know, we'll probably need a hoodie that day too, even though it's supposed to be in the high 60s. We've been keeping an eye on the weather for opening day, partially because we have to sit outside for 5 consecutive hours leading up to Vern's On Deck
show.
We're
going to be good this year, man.
So I think, you know, you need the hoodie in the early part of the day, and then maybe by the time the game starts, you're good to go. But yeah, I put the winter coat up. That's it. It could be 0 degrees today. The winter coat is done.
No.
I retired it for the season.
I wish.
I will not get it back out of the closet. It lives there now. I made my decision. It was a couple of days ago. I jumped the gun a little bit, admittedly, but the second it hit the main closet, no longer on the hooks by the door. It's done.
So tomorrow,
I'm done with big coats.
I think tomorrow morning, man, I'm going to have to go back to the full-blown winter coat just for one more day tomorrow. I brought the jacket today.
I'm not doing it for one more day. It's over. I retired it.
I wish it was. It's going to be like 30 tomorrow morning.
You have to deal with it.
I think we're going to have go with the full coat, unfortunately. But you guys can hit us up on the Jay's Southland Tow Service. Text line 913-586-7965. Did you guys watch some hoops last night? NCAA tournament technically began. First four action. The game that everybody was talking about heading into the night was North Carolina, San Diego State. That ended up being a snoozer about
slaughter.
7 minutes in. North Carolina just destroyed their fellow 11 seed, San Diego State. It ended up being 95-68. I believe they shot 70% from the field in the first half. It was a no contest. 47-23 at halftime. It was a really, really impressive performance for North Carolina. We all know the narrative and the discussion around them heading into the tournament. I feel good for the players. I'll leave it at that. Like, I'm not saying that we want
to... Yeah, everyone just bagged on them multiple days.
If you're a North Carolina player, people are saying you didn't deserve to be there, and you went out, and in their mind, they proved people wrong, right? I'm not saying that we should all now think the committee is good. No. But from a player perspective, I think the fact that they went out and basically gave a middle finger to everybody, I can appreciate that, I guess, for North Carolina and for the players in particular. I think now people are overreacting, though. Like, everybody's picking them to beat Ole Miss, just like it's no big deal, just because of one great night shooting against San Diego State. But that was really, really impressive, man. That was a really impressive way to begin the tournament. But if we're going to play the, North Carolina now has figured out, well, then they go beat Ole Miss, and then we can have a conversation.
look, and I, again, you're right in the sense that I do feel like it's nice for the players that they get to be like, they get to pump their chest out, right? Okay, fine, cool, good for you. I hate the, and I warned ahead of time, and it happened immediately. I mean, immediately this morning, it's like, see, the committee is right. And my argument is not which team is better at playing basketball, the same as in the college football playoff. And Big and I have gotten into this, like when he wants Georgia. My argument is not which team is the best team. My argument is which team has earned their spot. North Carolina won. They completely ruined the opposition, which is fine. Good for them. They might win a second game in the NCAA tournament, and they're going to feel really proud of what they've accomplished considering the fact that, no, they should not have even been here. Doesn't mean that they should just lay down and die and not try to win basketball games. They did shoot unbelievable in both halves of the game last night, but specifically in the first half. Obviously, they did that. But yeah, that game, 10 minutes in, was done.
It was.
You didn't have to tune in after 10 minutes. Look, it was way more. The first game.
It was awesome. First game was great.
Buzzer beater to open the NCAA tournament. The least amount of time left on a clock, you know, like 1.7 seconds or fumbling around for the ball, the whole thing. Yeah, that was. That's the way the tournament should
sure.
start.
Oh, it got
then
us
it was just
going.
An ass kicking in the other one.
St. Francis, Pennsylvania, 16 seed against Alabama State. It wasn't even just that there was the full court pass that led to a bucket. But if you watched that game throughout, that was just a really high level, entertaining college basketball game for two schools that admittedly like none of us knew anything about, right? Going in, hadn't watched a lick of St. Francis, Pennsylvania or Alabama State. But those moments,
you had,
yeah, those moments are why we like March, right? Like those are cool moments. Now, is there a very good chance they're going to get their ass kicked in their next game? Sure. That would be my one pushback. I think yesterday we were discussing off air or maybe it was on air about, hey, you know, if you win your conference, why are these teams having to play a play-in game? Have all the bubble teams play the first four. And I think on the surface, I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't want any 16 seeds having to earn their way into the regular 64-team field.
But then I thought about it more after watching what we just saw. I actually think we should like it this way. The reason why on the surface it sounds great that make the bubble teams play first four. If you're a small conference winner, you should get in the field without a first four. The reason why I think I disagree with that now after watching last night is that stage that those teams had, competitive, close game, a chance to really win the game, that national standalone game, it was the only college basketball game on. I don't count the NIT stuff last night. That was the only college basketball game on last night. Versus if you're a 16 seed like the other two 16 seeds that aren't playing in a play-in, you're going to, let's be real. I know it's
most
happened.
Likely.
I know it's happened recently.
It's happened twice now.
Yeah. But in general, you know, it's like 2 in 100 and whatever it is. Number one seeds, or 16 seeds versus number one seeds. So I actually think for Alabama A&M or Alabama State, that stage last night is worth the play-in spot because everybody was watching you versus you get lost in the shuffle. You're down 25 points in the first half to, let's say, Auburn, and it's over. So you get that moment to shine. That
and
would be my argument.
You get to have an NCAA tournament win. I guess I feel a little bit different because what happened in 19... when did the tournament expand? The 70s? 80s? When
I think the last expansion was the 80s. I think you're right.
So whatever happened in 1985 between 16 and 1 seeds doesn't matter now, doesn't matter in 2025. Over the last 5 years, more recent history, it's happened twice. I'm not saying it's a high statistical likelihood, but it's still on
68 in 2011, but 64 in 85.
Okay, so 85. Since 1985, I don't care what happened between 1985 and 2020 from 16 to 1 seeds. College basketball has changed a lot since then. The last 5 years, twice. So there's 4 games a year, 5 years, 20 times, 2 times out of 20, not bad. I'll take those odds just out of, because like if we factor the whole history, it's too much. Because like I understand, like before when it was 0 for a gajillion, sure, let's factor it all in. More recent history suggests that it's at least plausible that a 16 can beat a 1.
I think last night, though, was priceless for those programs.
Yeah, because they got to have a buzzer beater on, you know, like at the end. And it doesn't stop them from still winning their 1 seed game. It doesn't stop them from trying to actually accomplish that a couple of days from now. They play on Friday, right, against, I can't remember who.
Tomorrow. They'll play tomorrow. Remember, it's a quick turnaround.
And so they'll play tomorrow. Like, it doesn't stop miracles from happening again. The only thing that's the argument for it is, like, you get to say, I'm at South Alabama and I want an NCAA tournament game. I mean, or I'm at St. Francis and I want an NCAA tournament game, right? To be able to say that, I do think holds some weight. I just feel like they earned their way into the field and they shouldn't have to play in the play-in game.
Well, the problem is that the play-in games don't count as tournament wins for them. The play-in games don't. I don't think the play-in games count as tournament games anymore.
Did they change that?
Did they get rid of it? Because it used to count.
I don't know. So it counts as March Madness, like it is a part of it. But I don't know if you win a play-in game, you don't win. No, it doesn't count as a NCAA tournament win for you.
I think it does, though. I don't know if they get the payout, but I think it does. Last night during the broadcast, I believe the CBS crew or True TV crew said that in Alabama A&M gets their first ever NCAA tournament win. I believe that's exactly how it was phrased. Now, you might be right. They don't get the financial payout the way they do. You would in the first round of the tournament. But during the broadcast, in fact, the end of the game, I believe the lower third said first NCAA tournament win, Alabama A&M. And the broadcaster said St. Francis is vying for their first NCAA tournament win.
It does count now, because I know originally they did not, like, it didn't.
Back when it was the play-in games. Now, remember, they're the first four. Technically, is the first round. It's weird. Either way.
Or it's a non-round, and then Thursday starts the first, whatever nonsense they label it as.
Yeah, I think the overall last night.
We don't have to knock it just because they put them in there.
It should count. Yes.
And overall, look, last night, the first game was great. North Carolina, give them credit. I thought, going back to that, our friends over at You Go Brackets, who we've mentioned more and more because they were the most accurate bracketologists, one of the most, they summed it up. San Diego State deserved to be there, but probably wasn't good enough. North Carolina was good enough, probably didn't deserve to be there. And I think actually that's an accurate way of putting it.
Yeah. Way I view, and again, it doesn't, my exclusion of them or teams in any college sports is not about if I think they have UNC always had a stronger statistical likelihood of, let's just say, making a Sweet 16 than even the teams they got in, maybe even more than West Virginia, although West Virginia had 6 quad one wins. So I would say maybe you can't make an argument for them, but maybe than their opponent last night. It's just they didn't earn it. So, who cares now? The tournament has started, like you said. They won their game. They'll get another game in a couple of days. They'll get a chance to, as players, prove themselves in this situation. What's crazy, though, is that they could have played themselves in the last, 3 weeks of the season and just kept losing. They had a ton of opportunities to continue to prove themselves then. So, it's always just kind of this, mixed bag of stuff. But I don't know. I was excited because we got a buzzer beater to start it. And then we immediately got talking points. Buzzer beater, cool. UNC destroys their opponent. So now they get to puff their chest out and say, we deserve to do it. And I'm sure behind closed doors, their AD is see?
Well, to that point, it goes all the way back to so UNC was 1-12 in quad one. 10 of those games were against top 10 opponents. So when you look back at San Diego State didn't play one top 10 opponent. I reckon they probably played
one at
anything.
And UNC only had one loss against everyone else outside
Correct.
Of that
so
quad
I think, again, whether they're in or not, that's obviously in the past. What they do in the tournament is no jurisdiction on whether they should have been. If they make a Final Four run, that doesn't mean they should have been in when they originally were going through the bracket. They just took advantage of them actually being in.
Yeah. Because if we did that logic, it'd be crazy. It'd be number one seed losing back. Well, they shouldn't even have been in the tournament. Duke should have been out. And you're okay, let's not get crazy.
Yeah, and I'm sick of the whining about it already, though. I told you that yesterday. The tournament has happened now. I'm sick of it. Whether it's from West Virginia, also should stop whining. You just lost your head coach to Indiana too. So your coach isn't even there anymore. You just lost your head coach to Indiana as well. But
he just realized if they had a different jersey on the front of their thing, they'd have been in the tournament. So he's going to go get a better job.
So Alabama State moves on to take on Auburn tomorrow afternoon. North Carolina moves on to take on Ole Miss tomorrow as well on the first full day of the NCAA tournament. Tonight, you get a couple 11 seeds going at it again in another first four game. You get Xavier in Texas, and then the 16 seeds today, I believe, are Mount St. Mary's and American University.
Who you got in that one? What's the
American?
American.
Got to go American.
I told
We're
you
going
guys
American.
Alabama State yesterday, you got to go American, the Eagles from the Patriot League.
What's their record, Drew? I feel like you got this down
American
now.
American 22-12. Patriot League.
Who's their star player?
They can't even Can they even play in a different conference?
Drew's been scouting American. He says take American.
Them and Mount St. Mary's both have the same record, 22-12. American beat Navy actually to make it in the tournament. So
was that a good win?
That's kind of messed. America beat Navy. They shouldn't even be allowed to play each other.
It's weird because that whole league is interesting.
Yeah, that feels kind of like
Army and Navy are in there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
you don't want to beat our, you want to beat them, but also you want to.
I love that the Patriot League just has the service academy, right? Navy,
makes sense.
Army,
makes sense.
But then also just one school's but we're American.
Lafayette, Bucknell is in there too. I think.
Those just don't even fit. They should have just gotten all of the service academies, or your name has to have American in it.
Our attorney coverage on 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. We'll get back to the tournament a little bit later on in the show. But the Royals are just outside of a week away from opening day in Kansas City against the Guardians. And we were trying to talk a little bit more about what we expect. We did individual players over the last few weeks. Jonathan India, we were talking about, what do we expect from him? How about the offense as a whole? So last year, they were 13th in runs scored in all the baseball. They were 10th in batting average, 28th in walks. It's a big reason why Jonathan India was brought in, right? Have to be better than that. Can't be 28th in walks. I believe Jonathan India is going to improved 28th in walks big time. Second in strikeouts. They didn't strike out a whole lot. And then 21st in home runs. And I know some of that will just be the ballpark you're in. That's a big chunk of that. But the one stat there that I think can improve the easiest, clearly, it's not just because they were so far in the bottom of it, but because they acquired a player that's top five, top 10 in baseball in it. And that's Jonathan India. And that's the walks. 28th in walks. I believe from 28th, they can easily move up the chart to a top half of baseball when it comes. I really believe that one player can do that when you're talking about your leadoff hitter now being Jonathan India.
I mean, there's probably a reason why they targeted on base guys. Because you give those numbers and you're like, all right, 13th in runs scored. Because I think a lot of people perceive the Royals' offense as not being very consistent or not being very good. But look at it, 13th in runs scored, 10th in batting average. Didn't strike out a ton. That should probably regress back to the mean a little bit. They probably won't be second best in baseball in that department. Yeah, maybe they didn't hit a ton of home runs, but based on their park, I would say it's at least inside of that range and familiar with that range. No, I think the truth is that when you look at the way that the setup is, the Royals, first and foremost, can improve on base percentage. No doubt about that. They can improve that. There's no question about that. That's easy. But I do have some higher expectations for the offense, because being league average this year, in my mind, isn't enough, because being league average last year was enough because you had one of the best rotations in all of baseball. This year, just from normal regression, like we talk about, we'd expect a dip down there. I expect more from MJ or Massey or Renfroe, or I don't care, Jack Caglione in August. Yeah. But I expect more out of the offense this year. And I actually think that most of us should view it that way. That seems like a fair expectation. And walk should be the easiest way to get more runs. Mm-hmm. Better batting average for some of these guys. Just simply, I don't know, being on base more should improve all these numbers, shouldn't it?
I mean, the batting average, yeah, you would like to think about, that's the only one, though. Can they get better than 10th in batting average? That one is going to come down to...
Bobby would be the... Bobby and Vinny, I think, would be the linchpins to that argument. They would both need to improve their batting average by 10, 12 points.
My only concern with, like, how do they, as a team, increase that particular category would be, how confident are we that Salvador Perez, who could still have a really, really strong season, and nothing in spring has indicated that this is the year where suddenly age and father time catches up. But last year, he won the Silver Slugger. He's coming off his best offensive season probably since 2022. If we go back and look, we all know he was an all-star as well. And he hit, just we're just talking average, he hit .271, which was his best average since 2021. There's a decent chance. It doesn't even mean he has to have a bad season, but there's a decent chance the batting average goes down. I hope not. But let's say his batting average goes down 8 points even. You know, who's that would take you outside the top 10 in batting average. Who is stepping up? Now, maybe you just think they're getting a better batting average, to your point, out of the leadoff spot as well.
Yeah, I do. Well, almost assuredly they will, even though Jonathan Indy's been like a .260 mm-hmm. career hitter. .260 is a league average batting average. So, like, it might even be that high anymore. It might be .250. In Major League Baseball,
like we're just so used to, like, or something like
that. We're just so used to, you know, we're just so used to seeing people hit 300 as being like this marker of success in Major League Baseball, because that's what it was the entire time we were growing up. That's not what a good batting average is.
Now, last year, league anymore. Batting, this is just average batting average, if that makes sense. Last year, .243.
Yeah. .248.
.248 the year before, .243 the year before that, .244 the year before that. So it's right where it's .243 is.
Told you, there was only like 8 people who hit above 300 last year. Bobby Witt Jr. was one of them. So it's still hard for his average to go up unless he's going to become a .330 hitter, and he's Luis Arraez with power and speed. And I don't think that that's a reasonable thing to assume. But some of the guys, like, did MJ Melendez, but by the end of the year, was he hitting 200? Like, was his batting average 200 at the end of last season? Like, I think there's a pretty good chance that it wasn't. And so for an offensive perspective, I thought they were right around dead even.
206.
I thought that they were the 15th best offense in baseball, if you made me rank them out. I'd like you to be 10th. That's my expectation. That's what I think is the should-be expectation for what they're doing offensively, and I think should be a reasonable one based on just the way this has started. I did see while we were on the air.
Yeah.
The new trailer for Netflix's new season of Quarterback has released.
All right. Is it actually Quarterbacks again?
It actually is.
Obviously, yeah.
Well, we'll play the trailer. They hint at the possibility that it's not. So be warned that it's not. They're making a joke. And then at the end of this, you'll hear who the quarterbacks are going to be, Gold. I want you to hear who it is.
Oh, I see.
The greatest comeback in history. What a grab!
Touchdown.
The key to success is relentless dedication.
Dream big, work hard, and never give up.
We're really trying to chase excellence every day.
Does it get heated? Yeah, it's a high-pressure situation.
Seriously? Mascots?
Is this actually the plan?
You know they don't even talk, right?
We're only gone for one season.
You're not really doing that.
Ridiculous.
Can I make another suggestion? Why don't we just do another season of Quarterback?
I'm in if you're in.
I'm in.
Did you really think Quarterback was going anywhere?
All right, so.
So they did wide receivers off, last year, right?
They did, and then like they were joking there was going to be mascots, right? Like they were just getting further down the chain. They got Kirk Cousins back, which.
Wait, he's making a second appearance?
This poor guy gets benched in the middle of this season. It's going to be awkward as hell, his part. So he gets benched in the middle of the season. Jared Goff, who you're going to watch, get ultimately very disappointed in a postseason, but an excellent season run for them. And Drew's guy,
Joseph Lee Burrow,
will be the third quarterback. Dude, do you know how depressing that is going to be to watch for you? Watching it's an really entire not. Season in which they are massively disappointing as a team.
But he'll put up good numbers, or he did put up good numbers, you know?
Well, who cares about that?
I was told that's all that matters, so.
I guess I am fascinated on their end, like, how they were handling some of that stuff internally when they were losing and losing and kept losing, even though they were a team that was putting up good offensive numbers, because the behind-the-scenes look on them is probably more interesting than the other two teams.
I think once again, though, we're going to come away from this year of Quarterback, and we're going to say, man, Kirk Cousins, just a really good dude. That's what's going to happen again, because he gets benched because he wasn't playing well, and then you're going to find out he was a great teammate probably to Michael Penix Jr., and we know Kirk Cousins is still on the Falcons today, and the Falcons probably are not going to trade him at this point. There's
all
a good chance
they're just going to hold on to him.
So, look, Kirk Cousins will once again come off pretty good, I think, as a person. Jared Goff, people get to know a little bit better. Joe Burrow has a chance to increase his likability, I would say, show that he's not maybe just the really cocky, arrogant dude. And that's the perception, Drew. He has a chance to change that a little bit with this. We'll see.
That is his. You agree that that's his outside perception, right?
No.
Oh,
really? What do you think people think about Joe Burrow? Not as internal, not as a Bengals fan. The outside perspective is like he's arrogant. He's kind of a jerk.
I'd love to hear that.
You're hearing it from two people right now.
I moved here, I never heard that one solitary time until I moved here. I'm dead serious.
How often are we talking about Joe Burrow with people in like Florida, though? Was that coming up for you?
No, I'm just talking in general. Like the whole the national perception is not he's cocky and arrogant, as far as what I'm seeing, unless it's from a Ravens fan, a Chiefs fan, or I don't think anybody else is saying that about him.
I don't know.
I can't speak to the entire national narrative or whatever, but I do think that that's part of his public perception.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But
I mean, I'm sure
look, he has a chance because Kirk Cousins became more likable from people who are watching Quarterback. I kind of felt bad for him at times because he's like, this is my trophy case. I kept it empty for the trophies I'm going to win. I'm like, oh, Kirk. Oh, guy. I'm sorry, man.
My guess is...
That's a real bummer. Kirk Cousins, once again, I feel bad for you.
People will feel bad for Kirk Cousins again. Someone does bring up an interesting storyline. I wonder if how much they cover Joe Burrow's house getting robbed in season after a game.
I don't know
if they'll touch that or not. Maybe it's like the other one, they still have some editorial control. Like if there's something Joe Burrow or Goff or
Straight
Cousins
just don't, want,
don't want in there. Like, so that might be something that he doesn't. He just maybe is like, hey, we're not.
Well, because then there was the whole weird girlfriend stuff around there, right? Like who was at his house at the time.
It was not his girlfriend.
But like people were speculating that originally. Yeah. It's just weird. Yeah. No, I'm just saying like that would make for I would think he would want to avoid that entire storyline in the quarterback. Yeah, and he might. I don't know.
I wonder what the viewership in Kansas City will be, the ratings. If you guys are going to watch just to...
I mean, it won't be as high as the year Mahomes was in it, but it'll still be fairly high.
Yeah. I watched quarterback the year there was quarterback. Last year, wide receiver didn't watch a single episode. I'm like, I'll watch them as well, wide receivers. Quarterbacks are just a more interesting subject matter.
Yeah.
So I'm way more likely to watch this season of quarterback because, and again, Goff, their team was like super duper successful. You get to see the behind the scenes. Like if I'm a Bears fan, I'm watching because I get to see how Ben Johnson operates. If I'm the Jets, I'm curious how Aaron Glenn operates. So like there's just more broad appeal. Plus we know that they were the best team in the NFC who then ended up getting stunned in the playoffs. So like, that part of the storyline is always interesting and the stuff that comes with it. So, yeah, I'm just more intrigued by this season than the other.
Definitely will be watching. Yeah, I'll definitely watch. It'll be, I think, the most viewed one since the last quarterback one, to your point about just the positional value. It'll be in Kansas City, like Netflix ratings. It'll be less than the year Mahomes was in it, but it'll be pretty high, I would assume.
I'm really excited.
Comes out in what, July, usually? Right before training camp?
Did it say the day? July 12th is what I maybe have seen.
Okay.
I don't know if that actually is accurate or not. I saw the end of the trailer, but I can't remember if it just said July or
it just said July this 12th. July from the NFL. I don't know if they just didn't put the date on the tweet, but
no. I mean, seriously though, Joe Burrow can change some of the perception.
I agree.
We might end up being like, you know what? What a great,
or at least our perception.
What a great dude. You know what? Not as cocky as arrogant as he comes off to everybody.
You know,
else.
I'll be honest. I'd rather him be cocky and arrogant than nice and Josh Allen and the guy's so
winning
nice,
those MVP awards really sucks.
He's so good.
I hate to be nice and win an MVP
award.
The man
can't win a playoff game that matters.
I'd hate to be
so
nice
good.
And win a Super Bowl.
I'd be careful in the nice stuff. I mean, it's like most of the nice stuff you see with Josh Allen is like he's helping like cancer kids and stuff. I mean, he's mostly just doing cool stuff. He does have like a nice demeanor, but he's got more success than Joe Burrow. So like, I guess I don't care. Like, I guess your argument would be like if Josh Allen had Joe Burrow's cutthroatness.
How do you determine? If Josh Allen had Joe Burrow's cutthroat.
More touchdowns, more interceptions.
If Josh Allen had Joe Burrow's cutthroat persona, he would have at least one Super Bowl by now.
He would have one. Drew and I disagree a lot. I think that's the only argument you can make in this scenario for like what Joe Burrow does better than Josh Allen.
If Josh Allen
maybe he seems like he's more. He seems like he's. Joe Burrow does seem like a little bit more of a killer on the field than I think. But that might just be a perception thing because Josh Allen plays, again, great in the postseason. So, like, I don't feel like he's just going out there. He could be all shucksy as you want. He plays at an incredibly high level all the time. I do think there's quarterbacks who are hurt by the idea that when it's, like, the ultimate moment, they fail the most. But don't have it. But like, I mean,
Josh Allen's had several.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like I think that's more of a perception thing than a reality of his play thing.
So quarterback, we'll be keeping an eye on that this summer. Obviously, up next though, let's talk some college basketball with a former Missouri Tiger, current scout in the NBA, Jared Sutton. We'll get the lowdown on Missouri and Drake tomorrow.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Cody and Gold, we were continuing our discussion during the break about arrogance from athletes, some more than others.
I think it's always a bad thing.
No, I think that's
Jordan
where,
is.
I think that's has where
a, Michael Jordan was known as cocky and arrogant
for sure. And I think that's where I'm not saying it's bad to be cocky and arrogant. In fact, I would say that You kind of want your quarterback to be that. Our only disagreement, Drew, was you saying that the narrative isn't out there around Joe Burrow that he's cocky and arrogant. You can think it's a false narrative or not, that it's not a bad thing. I think acting like that's not the narrative that's out there is all, that's all I'm saying. I think we disagree that if you're saying you don't believe that's the narrative around him, that's all.
Patrick Mahomes is cocky. Probably. Mahomes wore a green suit to the Super Bowl in which they got smacked.
For sure. He can be confident and arrogant. I don't believe that's the perception, though. That's not the narrative around him. He has plenty of other things people take shots at him for, right? People unfortunately attack his family and other things, right? For Joe Burrow, people describe him as cocky, as arrogant. That's, I'm just saying what the narratives are around certain athletes. Anyway, let's talk to someone that is around professional athletes quite a bit as a scout in the NBA. He's a former Missouri Tigers guard, Jared Sutton, kind enough to call in and talk a little college basketball. But now I almost want your opinion, just being around athletes on arrogance and cockiness. And is that something as a scout? Like, do you like that a little bit?
I think it depends. I think there's moments when, you know, it's good to have a little swagger. And yeah, I mean, it never hurts to have confidence. Sometimes irrational confidence can be poked around in terms of, you know, does a player have self-awareness? I think that's kind of what it probably comes back to. But I think it's just a dependent on, you know, does that rub off the wrong way internally within your locker room or with your coaches? You know, that to me is a deeper conversation to have. But end of the day, certain guys, especially when you're a star player, everybody's mentality is different, and that attitude has to be kind of studied as you kind of look at players especially players you're going to bring into your locker room.
Jared, we know that where are you headed? Which region are you going to go watch some basketball at?
So it's interesting. I mean, I've been at WCC and ACC tournaments last week. Typically how we do it when the NCAA tournament starts up, we've seen all these players. We've been out on the road all year. So we do kind of a postseason organizational meeting with our front office. So we're actually going to be meeting as a group, and kind of like everybody, we're just going to sit and watch a lot of games together. We're going to meet in the morning and have meetings in the morning, and then we'll watch games in the afternoon and into the evening. So it's long days, but we're actually all together as a group. That's kind of how we've done it the last few years. And I actually kind of enjoy it that way. Instead of fighting around trying to get to certain games and regions, we're going to be like everybody and just watching games together. So I'm looking forward to that.
Since you were just at the ACC tournament, do you believe that North Carolina should have been in the tournament? Was the ACC any good?
No, I don't. I don't think North Carolina deserved to be in at all. I feel bad for West Virginia and then their coach leaves, you know, a couple days later. So that's a tough break. But look, I know they're talented, and we saw that last night. I wasn't really all that surprised to see. They have been playing better. But in terms of how we evaluate teams getting into the NCAA tournament and resumes and net and all these different ratings and factors of the data that go into making a selection, especially the athletic director being on the committee, I mean, that's not a good look.
No.
But they got in, and this is a part of it. It's a business. The NCAA looks at this as sometimes brand recognition, and it also comes back to talent and players, and those things do make a factor. These, you know, these people on the committee are human, and it is what it is. But boy, did they look like they were motivated, and they definitely been hearing the noise, and they showed it last night.
We're talking to Jared Sutton, former Missouri Tigers guard, current scout for the New Orleans Pelicans. All right, how you feel about your Missouri Tigers? 6 seed, they're going to play tomorrow night in Wichita against Drake, the Tigers 6.5-point favorites. I don't have to tell you the story about Drake this year, and seems to be everybody's favorite team right now as well, heading into the tournament. Just what do you make of the draw and how the Tigers are playing currently?
Well, I'm glad Mizzou got the 6 seed. I did not want to see them on the 7 line. And I think the Mississippi State win in Nashville, the SEC tournament, pretty much solidified that. Once I saw Ole Miss on the 6 line, I figured Mizzou was going to get the 6 as well, especially with the weight the SEC was carrying as a league from how the, you know, the selections were being made in those first few regions. The SEC was getting a lot of respect, which we thought would happen, and they get every team in, which was just fascinating to see the year that the SEC has had. In terms of where Mizzou sits, and then, you know, in terms of the matchup against Drake, and Mizzou's had a great year. And, you know, I think towards the end of the season, the 3-game losing streak was tough, especially the Vanderbilt game that I think kind of shook Mizzou, and then they came out flat the very next game against Oklahoma. And I've never really seen Mizzou play flat really all year. They had games where maybe they struggled, like the Texas game, but never seen them come out and play as flat as they played against Oklahoma. And obviously a lot's been made of the defense, I would say, over the last month. I think they're a better defense than they've showed really the last month. I thought they were better, especially in the Mississippi State game, which I thought was just a gritty win with Mark Mitchell going down, Josh Gray going out. That was a tough win they needed to get. They needed to find a win, especially after a tough loss at home to Kentucky, who's playing better, and then knowing they were going to face Florida. And I thought they battled against Florida. And it was just good to see Tamar Bates play aggressively. I think that was a big factor I wanted to see in the SEC tournament was Tamar's so important for this team. And I thought he really showed well in both games. And they need that aggressiveness every game from here on out. I thought it was important that they sat Mark Mitchell. I think he could have played in the Florida game. I think he could have came back in the Mississippi State game, but it was more precautionary. So I think Mizzou getting to full strength was really important going into the tournament. Now they face a Drake team that I saw play a lot at the beginning of the year. I saw them in Charleston at the Charleston Classic, a tournament they won. They had their probably best win against Vanderbilt, another SEC team, and looked great in doing so. Really just mantled every team. Ben McCollum is a big-time head coach. Those that follow the college game and follow basketball know how good he was at Northwest Missouri State. And the guys that he brought with him, the four guys that he brought from Northwest to Drake, and just how they played all year, 30-win team, they're just a fun watch. And they're really a disciplined, fundamentally sound team. They execute at such a high level. They do not make mistakes. Obviously, they beat Kansas State here in Kansas City. What a moment that was for Bennett Sturts, a local kid who's a K-State fan. So I really have so much respect for that team. But I do think in terms of the matchup, I think the matchup actually bodes well for Missouri in terms of their depth, their athleticism, their length, and just the battles that they've gone through within the SEC these last 2 months. Now, they have been a little bit up and down, and I do think it's what team are we going to see in this game pertaining to Missouri, because I know what we're going to get with Drake. They are a team that has been pretty consistent all year long. Mizzou this last, 3 weeks or so, been a little bit up and down. So I do think it's, a game of pace, a game of runs. What team's going to show up for Missouri? And then obviously, how are they going to handle, guarding a point guard in Bennett Sturts that has just been terrific all season?
What do you make of the Kansas matchup, Jarrett? Obviously, they draw Cal, so you get two. That's the coaches bracket we've decided between Patino and Cal and Self and everything else in between. I've never been particularly impressed with Arkansas this year. Not that Kansas has done it. Is it as simple as if Hunter Dickinson plays well, they beat Arkansas, and if he doesn't, they lose?
I think Hunter Dickinson has to play well, but I think Zeke Mayo has to be just as good too. I think the shot making really takes some pressure off of the offense. They need 3-point shooting in this tournament, and Zeke's got to be good. If they can get Rylan Griffin to make shots, great. If A.J. Storr plays well, great. He had some good moments in Kansas City at the Big 12 tournament. I think the more guys you can have step up to the moment, the better the better off you are. It's always a conversation of, defense travels, and, that's great when you have a great defense. That does bode well in March, but you also have to have an offense. You also have to be able to score the ball, and it can't just be one guy, too. I think that's something that history of the tournament shows, that you need multiple pieces and you need some depth as well to win in March. So that to me is the biggest question mark of Kansas. Can they get some production from that bench? Can Hunter play consistently? And then I think the biggest thing with Kansas is guarding the ball and getting back to being a good defense, primarily with Bill Self teams. They guard, and they guard at a high level, especially in March. And they just really haven't been doing that of late. And I think the high ball screen is going to be something to watch for with Boogie Flan coming back. I don't know what Boogie Flan will look like. He's been out since early January. Mm-hmm. So, will there be some rust there? That's going to be something to watch for. I don't think Adu Tierra will play in this game. But Zvonimir Visic, DJ Wagner, Carter Knox, Travon Brazil, they've been up and down. I agree with Cody. Arkansas has been really inconsistent. But the games that they've played well, especially late in the year when they really had to win games to get in the tournament, they look good in doing so, and they did it without two of their best players. So, give Cal some credit of getting this team into the tournament, because there was a time there where I thought Arkansas was flirting with like South Carolina levels of being one of the worst teams in the SEC, and they figured it out, and they did so without two of their best players. So it's a toss-up game. I think it's a game Kansas has, every ability to win the game, but it's going to come back to, can they play consistent ball, and can they play both ends of the floor in this game against Arkansas?
We're talking to Jarrett Sutton, former Missouri Tigers guard, current scout for the New Orleans Pelicans. When you have watched some of these top teams maybe throughout the season, give me the first three seed lines, I guess. Who's the most vulnerable, do you believe, even if it's one of the number one seeds?
Yeah, I lots made of Auburn. They played to this point over the last, I would say, 2 weeks. They have not played the dominant level of Auburn basketball we've seen for much of the year. I think St. John's as a two seed is kind of interesting because they defend so well. They got one of the best defenses in the country. But I do worry a little bit about them offensively just with the three-point shooting. They're not a great three-point shooting team, so it's something to watch for. You know, should Kansas, you know, move on and beat Arkansas, that matchup with St. John's would be really interesting in terms of matchup, especially with two coaches and Patino himself. I think other seeds, the same thing could be said for Houston a little bit as a one seed. Out of the ones, I think Houston could be a little vulnerable in terms of the offense because they're so predicated on offensive rebounding. We know how tough they are. We know how good they are defensively. I think Milo Suzan catching fire and playing so well, that is giving me a little bit more hope with Houston because it can't just be L.J. Crier making shots. They need somebody else. So Milos, that's something that Houston has really wanted to find, is Uzan's confidence in playing better, and he's done that. So I think that's a positive for Houston. But Alabama defensively, you know, that's always something to talk about because Alabama's had some issues in terms of they can score the ball at a high level, but can they stop anybody? That would be a question mark. I like Texas Tech as a three. I was a little bit surprised to see Kentucky as a three. They have battled injuries, and they have played well of late in the SEC. They do have quality wins. I think resume-wise, I knew they would be probably a top four, top five. I was a little bit interested in where they would fall, and to have them be a three was a little bit of a surprise for me. I think Wisconsin is totally predicated on John Tajay. So if you know Wisconsin goes where he goes, and we saw that in the Big Ten tournament, when he ran out of gas, and they did battle Michigan, but that Michigan game, he had no legs. And it's a little bit different in the NCAA tournament because you can win a game, have a day off, and then you play in the round of 32, and then you have the rest of the week to get ready for the next weekend. But Tajay is the guy for Wisconsin, and if he has a 2-for-15 game, they're probably going home. So those are kind of how I view those 1-2s and 3s.
Jared Sutton, really appreciate the time, man. Safe travels. Sounds like you'll just be watching it with everybody there on the staff, but we appreciate the insight. Enjoy the tournament.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me as always.
There you go. Jared Sutton, former Missouri Tigers guard, current scout for the New Orleans Pelicans. Good insight from him, not just on the locals, but obviously how he perceives some of the top seeds in the tournament, having gone and scouted a lot of these teams, a lot of these players throughout the entire college basketball season. Reminder, our tournament coverage here on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drink, scenic views. Drew, do you agree with the assessment of your Badgers there, what he was saying?
Yeah, I think he hit the nail on the head pretty well, where if John, they kind of go where John Tanjay goes. They've got a lot of depth. I mean, they do go nine deep, but John Tanjay is the engine that pulls that team along, where if he has a 2-for-15 game, like he said, then they're probably going home. I definitely agree with that.
Don't forget to join our Cody and Gold bracket challenge. If you need
280 brackets now, guys.
Okay.
280.
You got till tomorrow morning, right? The first game is tipping off a little after 11 o'clock our time. So you have till tomorrow morning. If you want a link, we can try the text again. 913-586.
If that doesn't work, then there are some people that DM me and it worked every single time. So
you can text in 913-586-7965. Drew can send you a link, or Twitter at Drew B. Nix, and he will send you a link. We found out we'll have free wings for a year from our friends over at Jefferson's as one of the prizes for the winner, plus a little other prize pack we're putting together. But we now know for sure we can confirm the free wings for a year yet again from Jefferson's.
Yes, we'll find some other stuff to add to it, but at least those things will be on the docket. So should be a good time as always. Looking forward to it. Look, I don't disagree with like the Zeke Mayo part, where all of a sudden he wasn't always. Because down the stretch, when they were like really struggling and it seemed like you're like, what the hell's going on with Kansas? Zeke Mayo was playing awful, awful basketball. When they got more competitive towards the end, when they were like playing okay against Houston and when they were beating team in the Big 12 tournament before, like that's when Zeke Mayo actually looked good. Hell, in the last game they lost in the Big 12 tournament, Zeke Mayo was great. Hunter Dickinson's way more the reason they lost that game. Zeke Mayo has played his best. Maybe he's going to be a tournament player. That does happen. I will say, not just for Kansas, this just across the board. Every once in a while, some player who's been frustrating to you for a huge chunk of the season decides they're like, I play better basketball now. The lights are bright, or the whatever it is.
Yeah, Remy Martin came out. He was a great player at Arizona State before, but
he did not have a good season in Kansas.
And then in the tournament, they don't win the national title without the way he played throughout the tournament.
And that would have been not the last player, but you would certainly have not at that time predicted Remy Martin to be the player to be like, that'll be the guy who helps Kansas bring it home. That doesn't sound right. But at the time, sometimes you can just find those kind of like Zeke Mayo, I think, is that player for them, I guess is the point.
No, I hear like,
you know, the guy who could surprise and do a better job than you would expect.
Updated lines, just line movement from opening, not a whole lot, but Kansas, a 4.5-point favorite against Arkansas tomorrow at 6:10. The Missouri Tigers have been basically steady, hanging steady there, 6.5-point favorites against Drake in the 6:11 game. That's taking place, of course, in Wichita. But the first game of the full day of NCAA tournament action will be tomorrow at 11:15 our time. That's the 8-9 matchup. Creighton, Louisville, the Louisville Cardinal are 2.5-point favorites. If they win that, they will likely face Auburn.
The way I look at the way, so like we were talking about Joe Burrow and the perception and all this other stuff. Mahomes has a certain perception too. Some of it does come to arrogance because of the counting on his fingers or the stuff that kind of comes with it. And there are certainly opposing fan bases will always hate the quarterback who is having success opposite them. There's no question about that. I did see Josh Allen talk a little bit about it, and this goes back to his perception a little bit too, where he was on an interview after he'd signed this extension, and he made a point of saying, like, look, I really don't want to put us in a bad spot financially, and I want to make sure that we have the players around us in order to do this. That doesn't mean any of these guys are just taking 50 cents on the dollar, right? Josh Allen is still the highest paid average annual quarterback in the NFL, but in this last deal, he did just give them, once again, a deal that gives them more flexibility than every quarterback deal. Mahomes did that the last time. Do we just fully expect when Patrick Mahomes redoes his deal, which we all agree is going to happen sometime in the next 12 months? Everyone agree to that timeline? 12 to 15 months?
The latest it could be. At one point,
the
after
start the of next year would be the latest, I think.
Yeah, after the 2023 extension, they said they would revisit it after the 2026 season. So I guess it could still be that, Cody. It could still be after next year, but the dollar amounts have changed so drastically with the quarterback market. I wonder if they're going to wait till after 2026. If not, it'll be before. Like,
and let everyone else get paid who's on the docket. Let Purdy or whoever else get their check. Mm-hmm. We all just kind of, I'm just asking, are we just blindly assuming that he will once again structure his contract in a way that gives them the ultimate flexibility? I think winning more Super Bowls only made it more likely.
I believe while he is in his prime, and at this stage of his career, he is still going to do everything possible to get taken care of financially, but also give them the flexibility. That's the key, right? Flexibility with the contract. It's not that the money is necessarily less. It's giving them the length and structure of the deal that allows them to still go out
pay
and build
forever.
The roster and give them flexibility so that if they need to in an offseason like this one, they can easily convert some of the money. And yes, that money doesn't just go away, but it's still, they have the years on the contract and they're not worried about that flexibility to do so. So I expect that to be the case. He's talked over and over about legacy, and he recognizes what his legacy is or could be, and he recognizes who he's chasing, even though I'm not saying he's thinking about it every day, but
he just knows he's chasing history. There's still a few quarterbacks he's chasing before he gets to Brady. He's still a Super Bowl shy of all the guys in second place, and by all the guys, I mean the three, Joe Montana, Terry Bradshaw, and why am I forgetting the fourth? Is that it?
I believe we're down to just Montana.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Brady and Mahomes. Brady.
So just the three. I'm thinking three total. So, like, once he gets one more Super Bowl ring, which I assume is inevitable, honestly, unless something changes based on the way his current career is going and he stops getting to Super Bowls, well, then, yeah, I think inevitably he knows. I think he knows in the back of the head the only guy he's really chasing is Brady. I think Patrick Mahomes retired today, and you could make an argument that he's already had the second greatest career at quarterback ever. I understand some of the counting stats wouldn't add up to that.
By the way, did you say Bradshaw?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so Brady, Montana, Bradshaw are ahead of him.
Yeah, those are the ones.
Okay.
And so when you look at it, and look, he's not chasing Bradshaw. He's chasing Bradshaw's
he's
rings.
He's tied with Aikman, Young. Aikman.
Yeah, he's not even chasing Bradshaw's career, right? Montana's maybe because people view him of the quarterback of that era. But that's the way it's going to work with Mahomes. The eras are Montana's going to own the 80s. Tom Brady's going to own the early 2000s, the 20s, if you just want to start it there, are going to belong to Patrick Mahomes because over that next decade or two, he's going to be the person who has complete control over that. I was just curious if I think the fact that he got to three, I think there was an argument like he gave him this big contract because he was always thinking about chasing history, right? That's why he signed. He's the only quarterback to just go out on 10-year contract deals. Everyone else does 3 years, 4 years, tears up old deals, all this other stuff. He's the only one who extended out the length. One, because the Chiefs knew they weren't going to regret it, even though he'd only had one Super Bowl ring, but also because he had to be willing to do it. He knew the numbers were going to go up. He knew that was all going to change. But the second he got two and then three, now we can taste the history. I wouldn't be surprised to find out as he gets older, like you're saying, while he's in his prime, when he's later in his career, I wouldn't be surprised to find out if he takes a bigger haircut. as he gets later in his career and he's really trying to get the numbers.
Well, yeah, I mean, when he, if he's still playing when he's 38, I don't think he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the league at 38. I could be way off on that. I don't think he will, without predicting the future of who the next young crop of quarterbacks and everybody. Like, I don't, like right now, Matthew Stafford's getting up there in age. I guess he's still, what, a top six paid now, top five paid? So I guess he could stay. He could be in the top five. I don't know if he'll be the highest.
But he could demand it and somebody would pay him.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
Tom Brady could have demanded it at 38 or 40 and someone
Tom
would
Brady
him.
Could unretire tomorrow and someone will give him $60 million a year if they had the financial means to do so cap space wise.
At this point, I would assume the Steelers would because they're sick of waiting on Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here in the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour, where things stand with the Vikings, with the Steelers, with Rodgers, with McCarthy, all of it, because it's getting kind of weird. But yeah, I think Mahomes just made it very clear how he's going to handle the contract stuff. While we were talking about this, I saw it's now official, the push to ban the tush push, the Packers.
It's been filed.
Is now, they officially filed the, I don't know what the terminology.
Rule change request.
Yeah, proposal to actually ban the tush push. And so people are pulling up multiple plays where the Packers stunk at the tush push on their own. And look, the one team that is the team behind it is it's always going to look bad.
Like
it's it's always going to look bad.
Yeah.
For it to pass.
Like when the Bills asked to change the rules in overtime, that looks sad.
It's always going to be bad.
Chiefs did it too.
Optically, they did. They did it right after. It gained no traction. Then when the Bills did it, it gained traction. So we'll see. I don't know if it's going to get bad, but the Packers are the face of it. The face of another NFC team is the face of the tush push ban that now has become official in the last 10 minutes or so.
No. Okay. Well, I mean, look, does it look kind of like sad behavior in the sense that, you know, you're like, oh, you're sick. But like you've said it, the sport and way you improve sports really just go to two ways. Like you're trying to improve a sport through safety, right? You change rules for safety. And then the only other rules you change, let's just be honest, are for aesthetics. Like that's it. When we change rules to benefit, when we change rules to say that like pass interference isn't pass interference, they're not doing that because they think the rule's unfair. They're doing it for aesthetics.
Yeah, the interesting.
They want the game to look appealing. I don't think a lot of people enjoy watching the tush push happen.
Yeah, it's a boring play.
It's kind of a boring play. So look, I don't care if they don't change it. I'm indifferent in the sense that if they keep letting them do that, that's fine. They're better at it than everyone else. It's still not a, you know, and 1 year, maybe somebody will figure out the way to slow it down. Didn't even matter in the Super Bowl, but. Fine, whatever.
There's another rule change we can either get to later today or do it tomorrow, because in addition to that, the far more interesting rule change was proposed by the Detroit Lions. The Lions proposed a bylaw change that would allow wildcard teams to be seeded higher than division winners based on record. You know, I'm against this, but you're, I think, very pro this.
Yeah.
I want a
difference in record for what it's worth. Like
okay. Okay. Yeah. So
not
the Lions,
just straight up.
The Lions proposed it. Doesn't mean it's going to pass, but interesting, especially because it actually would have helped the Vikings this year, not the Lions. So good for them for at least.
They're probably having that sweat in week 18, though, and they were like, dear God, man, if we lose and we got 14, 15 wins and we're not even going to get to play a home game. I told you, I am for this rule, but I do think there should be a difference. If you win your division at 10 games, but a wild card team has at 11, I don't think you should lose your home game.
So you want it to be what?
A difference of three games. Yes.
Okay.
I want the extreme examples that the bad division with the 9-8 squad who wins their division, while there's an 11 or 12 win team in the wild card range. In that case, sorry, you got to play on the road. I know you won your division, but let's not kid ourselves here. No. You obviously did not have to really work all that hard for it. So
I hear you.
I think if there's enough of a difference, I kind of like it.
I hear you. This is one of those. I don't know if I'll be able to be convinced on this one. I still think you winning your division should definitely mean something. And I think call me old school on that. That to me has to mean something still in the NFL in particular with this sport, with how many games there are, but just the nature of divisional scheduling. And for the most part, a pretty balanced schedule. You know, I understand that on paper, it looks tougher,
it's
easier
based on your year
but I actually think they do a pretty good job heading into a year with how the schedule rotates around and the balance and first place, other first place on paper, at least heading into the season and all that kind of stuff. But this will be one to follow. We won't know for like a couple months if any of this actually happens. I think maybe is it May the meetings take place for this, the rules committee, so we'll keep an eye on that. Up next, so let's talk about where some quarterbacks could end up, the latest on the Vikings situation, which has a serious impact on the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers. That's coming up next.